do a post-show part two of this conversation, but I wanted to read a tweet to give people a sense of what we're going to talk about from the author and journalist Alyssa Lynn Valdez, who wrote this quote from the New York Times review of Oppenheimer film. He served as director of a clandestine weapons lab built in a near desolate stretch of Los Alamos in New Mexico. She notes it was inhabited by Hispanos. They were given less than 24 hours to leave their farms bulldozed. We have 15 seconds to give us a sense of what we'll talk about in part two.
Well, there were a lot of secrecy aspects to Los Alamos. That's a lot to go into there. But the legacy of Los Alamos was a lot of these radiation effects and secrecy, the secrecy regime that really held sway in the U.S. for decades after, really, right to this day.
Well, Greg Mitchell, we want to thank you for being with us. We're going to link to your new piece for the Los Angeles Times. Oppenheimer's here. Is Hollywood still afraid of the truth about the atomic bomb? And we'll do part two at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. Masks and proof of vaccination are required at this time. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is conducting a survey and we want to hear from you. Your valuable feedback about KBOO will help shape the types of public affairs, news, and music programming we bring you and our community in the years ahead. We're also interested in how you listen to KBOO and will use this feedback to help serve you better. The survey is anonymous, however, you will have an opportunity to provide your contact information to enter a drawing. 10 lucky winners will receive a $50 gift card. The survey is open now, and the deadline to participate has been extended to Sunday, July 30th. Go to our website at kboo.fm/survey23. kboo.fm/survey23. Thank you in advance for your time and your feedback. Stay tuned for KBOO's next strategic plan coming soon.
KBOO.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO.fm, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO.fm. We are broadcasting live on this day, Monday, the 24th day in July in the year 2023, and we welcome you to our broadcast. I am Cecil Prescott, and I'm here with my co-host, Celeste Carey, and we welcome you.
Good morning.
How are you, Celeste?
I am well. How about yourself?
I am well on this, you know, late July morning. There's something about summer mornings that I like.
I appreciate the fact that summer is not over.
Oh. it's not over, and so hopefully people are able to have the opportunity to enjoy summer, but we're also indeed throughout the world continue to be impacted by climate change, and depending on where you are, it's an uncomfortable season.
That is true. And my my heart prayers go out to folks that are under heat domes, or we've had odd tornadoes and storms across the country. So for sure, keep all the people in your thoughts that are under these conditions.
Indeed.
But we're under a different set of conditions here, aren't we?
Yeah.
Of a political nature.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. How things change so quickly. So it was only, a little bit over a week ago, I think, on our program, we were talking about the proposals that Portland Commissioners Rene Gonzalez and Dan Ryan had in terms of bringing on changes that the voters voted on last November in terms of city council, and they had some possible reforms in terms of changes they wanted to implement, and they had a listening session last week, and it did not go well for them. They have since retreated as a response to the overwhelming outcry of citizens and people who participated in protests against their proposals.
So now, in the conversation last week, where did you leave off with our callers and in conversation? Because I want to make sure we don't rehash, but we try to carry this forward a little bit.
Well, I think in part of the conversation was in terms of having an opportunity for feedback and for people's initial response for me at least, these proposals which came out of nowhere, and how people would respond to that. I'm interested in what people feel about what happened within the past few weeks, what happened on Wednesday or Thursdays, and where do they think that leads reform movement, and also in terms of the positions of the present city commissioners. But those are just some of my ideas, and I am open to listeners' thoughts as well as your insights, Celeste.
Well, first, let's give our phone number, 503-823.
No. 503-231-8187.
You know what number I was about to give? It was for city and county information and referral. I really wanted people to plug in. Yes, 503-231-8187. Get that preloaded.
Okay. And I interrupted you earlier of the number you were going to give to the listeners.
Well, it was. Yeah, we can get that one later because. I will give it again, but I want to get people to call in first here. The number I was giving was just to help connect you to city-county information. Now, that way you can get the commissioner's numbers directly, but I'll also look up the commissioner numbers directly, too.
Okay.
Go ahead.
To help get people on board, I would refer to them to a couple of articles that we'll refer to throughout our discussions. And here's one from Portland Mercury from Taylor Griggs, July 20th, titled Rogues Commissioners Plan to Subvert Voters with New Charter Reform Measures Fall Flat for Now. And here's Taylor's article. A little over a week after the public found out about the plan, most elements of Commissioners Dan Bryant and Rene Gonzalez's proposals to overhaul Portland government transition have lost steam. Advocates for the original measure that voters approved last November came out strong against the new changes in a Tuesday work session on the proposal, further revealed the plan's deep unpopularity with even Mayor Ted Wheeler coming out against it. Ryan said in a statement that the proposal for reducing city council size from 12 to 8 councilors and changing the ranked choice voting system outlined in the original charter reform measure were Commissioner Rene Gonzalez's ideas from the outset, and he, quote, wants to make it clear, unquote, that he is not prepared to support them. Ryan still wants to add a mayoral veto or council override mechanism to the measure, but plans to push that proposal to the May 2024 ballot. Initially, I was curious of these ideas, so I called for a work session to gather public input and gain a deep understanding of the potential implications, Ryan said. The work session on Tuesday brought much clarity. Without Ryan's vote, the math doesn't add up for Gonzalez to continue pushing the proposal, indicating Portland City Council won't vote on the charter reform measure change next week after all. City commissioners have a responsibility to reassess from time to time prior decisions that have long-term effects, Gonzalez told Oregon Public Broadcasting Thursday. After conferring with my colleagues, it has become clear there is a lack of support within City Hall. Advocates for the original charter reform measure has express relief at the news and say it's demonstrate the impact that public engagement can have.
Yeah.
She concludes by saying it's good to see that City Council appears to have heard the resounding public outcry regarding Bryant and Gonzalez's undemocratic attempts to undermine the wills of Portland voters. Damon Mott Story, one of the organizers of Tuesday pro-charter reform rally, told the Mercury, staying focused on supporting a smooth implementation of our new form of government and election is essential, and no amendments should be made until we have all had a chance to experience our new systems in action. However, Ryan did say that he's moving the mayoral proposed ballot treasure to a later council session. While they don't support including a mayoral veto in Portland's new system of government, during Tuesday work session, advocates for the original charter reform said that adding such a change would create the least structural impact for people working on the city transition. I don't agree that it's a simple tweak. I think it really shifts the power, Candace Avalos, a former member of the Charter Reform Commission, said at the work session. But as far as implementation, a mayoral veto is much different than implementing a totally new voter system or changing districting. That would take a lot more administrative burden on the election system. Avalos also said if a new proposal for the charter reform system was to be brought to voters, she thinks it would be better to do it during the regular election cycle, which would encourage more voter turnout and allow more time for education about the proposals. Meanwhile, new reporting shows Gonzalez has his sight on making changes to the other voters-approved measures, including Portland Accountability Commissions and the Portland Clean Energy Fund. After the chaos of last week, he may be hard-pressed to find allies for those causes, but advocates are still staying alert. Conservatives and Republican interests have been infiltrating Portland politics under the guise of centrism. We know that action speaks louder than words, New City Booster Coalition Portland for All wrote on Twitter. We will not stand for narrowly elected conservatives undermining popular progressive policies. So concludes this article. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO.FM. This is Celeste. No, well, you are Celeste. I'm Cecil. Well, not you, collectively.
I knew what you meant.
Okay.
I knew what you meant. Well, you know, there's two that stand out to me. One is, well, actually three, but of the two, one is I am confused as to why these two particular commissioners who claim to have, you know, a centrist view and are trying to appear to be working in the public's best interest, which I guess you could say is kind of like a populist position, how they are misreading the room on a 58% passing of the charter reform. That's a significant amount of vote. And in a time where things are squeaking in, you know, with a simple majority, I'm confused how they're misreading this. I don't understand unless they are misrepresenting who they are. That's one concern. Then the next concern is, it's not a concern. It's kind of like, I looked at some of their proposals for changes, you know, and I know that there were concerns about whether the mayor should or shouldn't have veto power, and the timing of when the representatives from each one of the geographical districts would be elected. And so I thought, well, staggered elections does seem to make sense, because that way you don't have a whole new crew coming in each time, and that would preserve some measure of institutional memory, you know. But I don't really, to get back to that main one, I don't understand how they're misreading the room. And I was wondering what some of the callers thought about that. Is that a significant concern? Especially when they're going back now and they're trying to disrupt other things that have been approved by either council or the voters.
Well, I think that's significant, and maybe they are in fact not misreading the room, and perhaps, and you began your remarks, Celeste, by my interpretation of it felt, I heard, you know, by lifting up their, they were coming from a centrist viewpoint and lifting up as if that's honorable. I'll put that aside, whether or not I think centrism is a good political perspective. But also,
I don't think it is all the time.
But also, you noted that they might have their sights in other changes of voters-approved Portland measures. And as we touched upon last week, you know, talking about Gonzales and Portland Street response, and also what, you know, apparently Gonzales has in terms of Portland Police Accountability Commission and Portland Clean Energy Funds. And it seems as if his interest is quite clear in terms of who he has primary loyalty to. And before we go to our callers, I also, you know, just in terms of full disclosure, want to say that, you know, Portland is a small town and everyone knows everyone, and there's 2 degrees of separation, but also that I've known Dan Ryan before he was a city commissioner for, you know, over 2 decades. So that's that. But you are listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO, and we have a caller online. Santiago is calling. Good morning, Santiago. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. It's Monday, you know. Hot weekend. Back at work.
All right.
Anyway. Yeah. So just in terms of centrism is an op, because in order to really be centrist, you would first have to really understand like what the fundamental differences between left and right are. Mm-hmm. And right is pro-capitalism, and left is pro-community. It's socialist and communist. So I mean, it's the opposite. You got pro-corporatism versus pro-humanitarian, you know, and people will argue all day because they'll want to use the USSR. And it's like, yeah, the USSR made mistakes, but at the end of the day, it was no friend of the U.S. and in a lot of ways pushed the U.S. in a lot of different directions that it wouldn't have gone in order to stave off a potential revolution. For example, the Green New Deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, the original New Deal, my bad. But anyway, more to the point. The point is that centrism is about pretending that both sides have an equal footing when they really do not. You know, the people who claim to be centrist are essentially right-wingers trying to shoehorn in, attempting to shoehorn in right-wing reforms under the guise, like you said, of, you know, both of both sidism. But if there's no both sides, there's no centrist point, there's no center point between, like, you know, pro-equality and pro-oppression. You know, there's no center balance to pro-choice versus pro-life. There's no center choice between, like, you know, freedom of religion to enshrinement of Christianity. There's no real centrist take. I mean, you can weigh the information, but at the end of the day, I mean, No Labels group just mm-hmm. got exposed as a fraud because they were like a huge like corporate op. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But centrism only helps the oppressor at the end of the day because it's for people who are uncomfortable with hearing the other side and want to be able to feign some sort of respectability.
Sure.
Centrism is dangerous.
And thank you. I think I agree with like 99.9% of what you just said. I'm curious if you had a response to one of Celeste's question initial. How do you think that Gonzalez and Ryan misread the room in terms of their proposals?
They're not misreading the room.
Mm-hmm.
They're not there. They aren't there to read the room at all. They are there with a pre-made script. Mm-hmm. They don't care what the room says. Centrists do not care. Centrists are right wingers. Coming in under the guise of trying to find the best. You know, they always say, like, not left, not right, but forward. But centrists are always right wing because, like I said, you can't. There is no centrist point on any of the big issues of the day. There's no center point between like working to mitigate climate change and trying to support oil companies.
So If that's true, how is it possible to make movement progressive change if sides are so opposed to one another that there is no common ground?
The problem is we don't define our terms. Mm. Like, for instance, progressive after the Red Scare, progressive was essentially the stand-in for socialists because socialists and communists were blackballed, you know, between the 40s and the end of the Vietnam War, because they were such a huge influence in turning the tide of public perception. But at their inception, progressives were essentially a stand-in for socialists, and now after some time has waned on and, you know, we've lost our institutional memory of the fact that we even had pro-socialist, pro-communist parties in this country, that, you know, now progressive is just like, it's nicer capitalism. It's, you know, it's people who are pro, like, Nordic, you know, state capitalism, which is still predicated on the third world, the extraction and oppression of third world countries in order to do uneven trade.
Okay,
and
that's important. And also, I'm interested in how do you make movement for people to acknowledge the way of socialism? How do you make movement for people to look at things differently and to possibly move from fascism to socialism, communism?
Well, my thing is we have to disengage from the Democratic Party, like, on the whole. We have to start, you know, move, like, you know, for instance, for black folks, you know, there's the African People's Socialist Party. There's also the All African, there's two different ones, but they're both socialist parties. There's two of those. than for like Chicanos or Latinx, as some people like to say. There's La Raza Unida Party, you know, for I don't know if there's anything similar to that for like Asian Pacific Islander, but if there was, I'd let you know. And then for like everybody else under a general term, I mean, you have like your you know, like your Socialist Parties of America. There's American Communist Party, which, you know, it's still a little sus sometimes, but it's better to be engaged than not at all. But the thing is people need to be exposed to like what actual leftism is, because there's people think that leftists, you know, people don't realize that, you know, like there is the leftist view isn't Democrats, because the Democratic Party in any other country would be considered a right wing party. So there's no center between two right parties. You just have, as Christopher Hedges would say, the happy face of pro corporate fascism, and then the angry white man's party. I mean, there's no, yeah. You know, there's you know you have one that's a bare steel cage, and the other one's the same steel cage, but it's wrapped in carpeting and has lots of like. Like, you know, it's like rainbow imperialism. Like, it's still a cage, but you're surrounded by Black Lives Matter flags and, you know, and rainbow flags and all that stuff. But it's still the same cage. You know, you still have to have some sort of fealty to a nation that has consistently shown on every metric to not be of any use to poor or black and brown or non-white folks in general, or trans folks, queer folks, whatever, people who aren't cishet white Christian. So, anyway.
Thank you so much. Celeste, do you have any final words before we left Santiago go?
No, Santiago, you hit all my points. You know, the only thing I might have said differently is like still kind of saying the same thing. When you were talking about centrist, you know, just being right wing in disguise. And basically, I'm, like you said, Cecil, about 99% in agreement.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Santiago, and you have a great day. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. You are listening to your host. I am Cecil.
I am Celeste, and good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Portland, and people who are listening beyond the Portland proper, throughout the world.
Yes. And if you are and listening throughout the world, you're at KBOO.FM. If you are in the Willamette River Valley and point south, it is 104.3, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge and point east.
And our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We are talking specifically this morning about the turnabout and the proposal that Portland Commissioners Renee Gonzalez and Dan Ryan had in terms of making changes to the charter reforms that the voters approved last November. They decided, and I appreciate how Celeste said it after reading the room, that they needed to withdraw their proposals. And I thought it was interesting, Celeste, in the article that I read, that Commissioner Ryan was very clear and insistent that this wasn't my proposal, it was Renee's
yeah.
proposal.
Yeah, threw him right under the bus. But I mean, you know, I could kind of twist it to suit my needs for this moment and say, well, my mom used to say there is no honor among thieves. No. Leave it at that.
Okay. And you know, I know they are all, well, we want to hear what you have to say. 503-231-8187. And I'm also interested in terms of your thoughts in terms of how do we respond to what will continue to be, I think, pushback to these reforms that voters approved, and also how do we organize against possible attack against other popular measures that we have voted for. Specifically, we talked about Portland Street Response, but also Clean Energy Initiative, as well as what's the other one? Cop reform.
Yes. Well, the commission, the Oversight Commission.
Oversight Commission.
Reforming the structure of the Oversight Commission. So, you know, these are things that are near and dear to Portland's heart. And if I wanted to piggyback on what Santiago said, and, you know, your pushback on them being, you know, populist and actually, in fact, trying to maintain the power of the status quo and the old hegemony of the city council. It sounds like what they've done is kind of like play the Trump card, no pun intended, mm-hmm. and kind of like said one thing as they're moving in and are doing another. So, you know, it sounds like they are disrupting and trying to secure the old structure. And Cecil is asking folks, how do we push back on it? And so I'm curious, can give us your calls and tell us, well, how do we safeguard the changes that we've made, that we voted in and indicated that we want as Portlanders against groups that are trying to prevent the last gasp of the current power structure?
And it's interesting because as we looked at the current makeup of Portland City Council, it seems to me that there is an overwhelming business interest that has the ears, that has the power at the present city council. So we see possible opponents of reforms voices. And so I would include among those the Mayor Ted Wheeler, Commissioner Mapps, who announced that he's running for mayor, Commissioner Gonzalez, and Commissioner Dan Ryan, who certainly for me has certainly shifted the lifted up the voices of more conservative interests than more, and fill it in the word, progressive leftist voices. And, you know, we saw that quite clearly evident in the election last year of Rene Gonzalez against Joanne Hardesty. Let's go to our next caller and hear what George has to say. Good morning, George.
Oh, good morning, Cecil and Celeste. It's good to hear you. And I just wanted to say that I really saw the Portland Street Response innovation as a very positive thing, and I still do. And I'm just hoping that we can somehow treat it as something that needs plenty of support from the voters, plenty of support from the citizens, because to me it marked a step away from the let's have the police involved in everything we do. And wasn't maybe quite that thorough, but I like it with the street response being with skilled people in social work and the police involved only if there is a really serious situation that comes up, and that's just what I wanted to say.
Yeah, thank you. George, yes. Celeste.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well, you know, the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing held their Community Engagement Subcommittee meeting last Wednesday, and Portland Street Response came and shared a lot of their activities, discuss structure, funding challenges and hopes, hiring and everything to try to demystify it and get more information out. And that was a very important meeting, I think, because it contradicts the narrative that's being created about how well it's working. There's a narrative that serves those who want to dismantle it. But most of the people who have experienced the services recognize that something like this is very necessary because of the way we train our police. We don't train our police to be adequately engaged and compassionate toward the needs of homeless people and people in various other forms of distress, emotional or economic or whatever, mental, whatever. So, you know, I'm going to see if we can get them to maybe come and talk with us here on More Talk Radio to further demystify them. But, you know, it's really important that we support these alternative models and get the word out how they're working. So I'm glad, you know, that our caller is calling and sharing that information. There was something you were about to say, Cecil?
No, I was wondering whether or not in terms of Portland's street response, and we have mentioned that Commissioner Gonzalez is over the street response now. Yes. He's commissioner of the Fire Bureau, which is, and it seems as if there's a push on his part to defund Portland street response. Any information you have to share, Celeste?
Not right now. Well, for one reason, I'm not there, and so I'm not getting all of my information. I'm not getting all my information firsthand. Mm-hmm. But I do know that there is a lot of effort on the PCEP, again, the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing, to not only support it, but, you know, we're taking, we're looking at how we can be advocates in terms of getting the word out to the public, in terms of interacting with the commissioners, in terms of finding champions, you know, just all of that we can do. So, I mean, with regard to that, yeah. All I will say is I'm working hard. You know, our committee is working hard to make sure that the value of Portland Street Response is known to the public and that we can find some way to support it. Because in essence, that's one of the most important things that this city can offer its residents, and that is knowing that if you are suffering from challenges that put you in harm's way due to psychological, mental health, physical health, homelessness, there is support, but also to protect those who have been victim of the criminal element of homelessness from, you know, harm. And so there is a partnership that needs to be formed, but it seems so many times that here in Portland, that partnership is always uprooted and dismantled. We don't have to be oppositional. We don't have to be polarized in trying to find an answer to that. But, you know, when somebody who claims to be for law and order tries to disrupt the very committee that's working that will get everybody some measure of security, you just have to wonder, well, who are you? Or how do you actually represent Portland? Or are you just representing narrow interests?
And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on community radio station KBOO Portland. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We solicit your thoughts and your calls to respond to the question in terms of Portland City Commissioners and the fact that Commissioners Gonzalez and Ryan have withdrawn their proposals to alter the reforms that Portland voters approved last November in terms of the city charter and city government. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. I'm interested in expanding our discussion Celeste, and you know, we talked briefly about these interests and who controls those in City Hall. And this article refers to how Commissioner Gonzalez has probably also his sights set on making changes to other voters-approved measures, including the Police Accountability Commission and the Portland Clean Energy Fund. And it reminds me that, you know, a lot of times people work to make these very sincere changes in the way we govern ourselves, and that, you know, we cannot just, you know, exhale at the end of election day, that we must remain vigilant at all times, because quite apparently that those in opposition to voters approved measures are not falling asleep.
No, they're not. They're actually, you know, frustrated and resentful that we're exercising some measure of vigilance, and so they're fighting even harder. And so it's really important for us to figure out what are our options in terms of pushback, or what are our options in terms of what's the word I'm looking for? Well, let me just say fighting back against their pushback.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things that you opened up with for the beginning of the show. And so I'm looking forward to people calling in and giving us some idea. How are you being vigilant? How are you looking at structuring pushback? Because assume this is not the only way that we're going to see, you know. I'm fascinated by the fact that we have new commissioners on board, and they don't like the reforms that were voted in. And I mean, was that their whole reason for running for office, to dismantle that? Now, I mean, that's what politics is, you know. If you don't like something, you get into a position of power and you convince like-minded individuals to support the changes. Okay, that's the game, you know. But again, I maybe I sound naive. I'm not being naive. I'm just trying to sum it up quickly. They're not reading the room. Or maybe they are. They're just reading their interest room. I don't know.
Well, and they may not be. And I wonder, you know, there seems to be a sense of excitement of the changes that's possible in terms of Portland City Council. So the discussion of expanding the membership to 12 members, to have people represent different parts of the city, different neighborhoods, to have ranked choice voting, these reforms are very radical, in the sense that they will fundamentally alter the way we govern ourselves. And I think that those powers see that things are changing, and that there's, for lack of a better term, there's a new sheriff in town, or new sheriffs, plural, in town, and that people from different communities will have different voices and different ways in which we will elect those who represent us. It's a time of excitement, possibility for me, and it might be messy, but democracy is messy.
It is messy, and I, for one, am excited. I mean, if nothing else, the fact that there be geographical representation is really important. It will ensure a change in the demographic. East Portland has been too long ignored, or, you know, by fact or by law or by happenstance, whatever. I know this from having lived in East Portland. I lived there for roughly 20 years when I first moved here. And even now in 2023, you can still run into places where services that other parts of the city take for granted are missing. Simple things, you know, like maybe having a sewer, like maybe having a crosswalk,
sidewalk.
Like maybe having street lights, you know, a sidewalk. And these things are important. They're important because having that creates a sense of shared ownership and shared vision. And Portland is falling apart because there hasn't been a concerted effort at creating a shared vision.
And, you know, related to that, creating a shared vision is this embrace of ranked choice voting, which means that we will have the opportunity to choose people we want to represent us. And it will not the, you know, the one people we want to be there. And
not the lesser evil. Not the lesser evil.
That's right. Not the lesser evil. And I think it offers a possibility of changing the way those running for office run. Because I think it might change, like, the degree of negative campaigning. Because if I want you to vote for me, I'm certainly not going to talk about your mother bad, or the person you would rather your first choice. So it might be a way in which we can discover ways in which people can work in coalitions in terms of changing or doing things in our city.
One thing I will hope it does, and this is going to be one of the most blunt statements I've made in a while. I hope, because you will be choosing representatives from geographical districts, meaning that they're going to be accountable to their neighbors, that people will really look at the character and the track record of people they vote for, and not let people come in with smooth talk or, you know, unctuous attitude and say one thing and not even have a track record for doing that. You know, and I'm going to hold up Clarence Thomas as a great example. You know, when he was elected, when he was being vetted, he ran on a race card, even though he had done nothing to earn the support of many of the black communities that voted for him. And it tore apart the community, because if you didn't like him, well, you're against a good black man. If you did like him, you know, there was a whole different thing. And so what happened is people did not vote on his actual character and his actual track record of supporting the people that he claimed to represent.
I think that's an important point that you make in terms of Clarence Thomas. Just in addition of clarity, you know, the people who voted on Clarence Thomas were mostly white men in the U.S. Senate.
I know.
And Clarence Thomas certainly never ran for an electoral position.
That's why I had to correct myself. You were absolutely right. So I sit corrected on that. But it did create a large schism within the black community.
Let's go to our next caller. Nancy, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Cecil. Good morning, Celeste. This is a great conversation. I've been thinking about, with the new commission form, I think the other change is that the bureaus will be run by managers and there'll be a city manager.
Yes.
And I'm hoping that that will improve and reduce some of the politicizing. For example, let's say Portland Street Response, if it wasn't in the fire bureau or it had more layers of experienced staff between it and the politicians, then I think it has a better chance of being properly, consistently funded and staffed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe the Fire Bureau is not the right place because that union is very powerful and they don't want anything getting in the way of their fire folks mm-hmm. getting the full funding. And similarly, the police union is incredibly powerful and the business interests are incredibly powerful. And those are the power bases lining up behind these new commissioners who are trying to dismantle this mm. change to the structure.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm not an expert on this stuff, but I have to think that if you put a layer of professional staff between these agencies and the politicians, things have perhaps a likelihood of improving how they're funded and operated. So in addition to having more folks representing our communities, I think removing our commissioners from being heads of these bureaus is going to be helpful.
Nancy, I could not agree with you more. The mere fact that the first word that pops out is professional is profound. You know, a lot of these politicians have no skill in these areas, yet we
right.
vote on them to run something. We would not let them run our family household.
Right? And it's like, we talk about these new commissioners, they're so inexperienced. Look at what they just did last week. Like you said, they did not read the room. You know who they read? Was their business interest pushing them and their unions pushing
exactly.
them. They said, you know what, throw it on the wall and see what happens. Mm-hmm. Well, what happened was, thank goodness, the Friends of Portland Street Response banged the drum and got a ton of interest saying, don't you dare defund this, right? So mm-hmm. I just think, I mean, it's not going to be the panacea, and like you folks said, we have to keep on top of it and monitoring and demanding accountability, but we've got to get some professional staff in there and get that. There's got to be a line between, like, you set an operating budget, you set a staffing level, and you follow that. You don't start messing around with not filling filling positions, right? Didn't Ryan just stop mm-hmm. filling positions? Or maybe it was Gonzalez. I don't know. But, like, they're not even hiring new
yeah.
folks for Portland Street Response. That's ridiculous. No one should be allowed to do that.
You're so right, Nancy. And, you know,
yes.
yeah.
Well, it's not even just having enough staff. I read an article recently. I don't have it in front of me, so I'm paraphrasing. Forgive me. But there's a conflict right now over the current Portland Street Response staff being able to get folks in for service. And they're not allowed to, I don't want to say, I can't think of the exact word, but they cannot force somebody to go in for evaluation. And so far,
yeah.
only the police
yeah.
and the firefighters have that option. Yet neither
yeah.
one of those bodies want those duties. And so I
right.
know it's a significant duty to them to be able to force somebody in for assessment, but not letting Portland Street Response, it sounds like, well, I don't want to eat the hay, but I'm not going to let you eat it either. And it's
right,
not a
exactly.
It's not a healthy
right.
stance. And so that is one of the things that I would help, having professional staff to back up Portland Street Response as they try to move forward with their mission. I believe that would make a lot of sense because it becomes really apparent how to build an effective operation with this, and you don't have politicians trying to make it look like, oh, it's merely incompetent, rather than
right.
there being obstructionistic.
Right, right. And hopefully professional staff would be less likely to be influenced by unions. Now, it's
yes.
not perfect. You know, people mm-hmm. still will have their friends talking to them on the side.
Right.
But
mm-hmm.
you would hope that there would be some performance standards around, you know, declare conflicts of interest and, you know,
yes.
not being influenced by outside forces. That should be enforced on paid professional staff, that politicians just hide behind closed doors when they're doing that stuff.
Yes. Enforce competencies.
Exactly. All right. Well, I'll let you folks go.
Call.
Thank you for this conversation. Bye-bye.
Thank you for your call. And Nancy, keep supporting this position with your friends and your platforms.
So important. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, and stay tuned following our program here on your community radio station. If you are listening live on Monday, the 24th of July, at 9 a.m. is the OMO Variety Hour. Norm Diamond hosts this episode, which include following segments, The Left and the Law on the Supreme Court, talking about the rightward shift of the Supreme Court in overturning affirmative action. And so stay tuned for that programming here live and other important segments. And continue to support your community radio station. And we so depend upon you, because this is community radio station. And we are because you are.
We are because you are. And actually, we are you. So, you know, as we're winding down this show, one of the things that Cecil brought up, and I think Santiago might have also, is that it is really important for us to stay vigilant, look at how all of our elected are supporting or obstructing our attempts to change and make a more equitable governance system. And so if that means that you have to turn out to a community meeting to support these new governance structures, or to support new social programs to help all of us be healthy, do that. And, you know, I realize everybody doesn't have the freedom to take off work and come in, but we have lots of ways that we can get our voices heard, whether you go electronically and send it, whether you write through snail mail, with phone calls, or physical appearances at these events. But whatever you do, do it.
You know,
that's the important thing. Do it.
That is so important. I don't think that it is should be a surprise that this region of the country has been a focus of concern and attack by right wing forces. Whether we talk about, you know, over the number of years in terms of opposition, and that's because there has been within the DNA of this region, the opportunity for people to do people-oriented movements. And so the example of the reforms that voters voted on most recently in terms of changing the city government is one example of how our region has the opportunity to offer new ways of being in community. Not that, as you suggested, Celeste, that we're perfect, but we have the opportunity to continue to lead with our dreams and our vision, and know that there will be opposition always. And so,
always.
And so, you know, it's okay to work hard, to breathe, to catch your breath, but we have to continue the work. And if we get tired, we have to share the knowledge with those around us so they can do the work.
Yes, yes. So keep doing the work, stay connected, be willing to reach across whatever aisle there is presenting itself, you know, build coalitions, and keep supporting your community connection as a choice platform in doing so. Thank you, everyone, for those who are financially supporting us. Thank you, everyone, for making sure that your family and friends listen to KBOO. And stay tuned for the OMO Variety here on your community connection, KBOO Portland. And thanks and kudos to our engineer, Ray.
Hi, this is Mark Sanford Gross, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to KBOO, KBOO, 90.7 FM, Portland.
3 summers ago, Portlanders stood united in demanding changes to the Institution of Policing and the Portland Police Bureau. Since then, the Police Accountability Commission has been building a proposal for a new voter-mandated, civilian-led police oversight system. For the July edition of Totality of Circumstances, members of the PAC will be live in the KBOO studio to field your questions and comments before their final plan goes to the City Council at the end of August. Tune in and give us a call on Tuesday, July 25th from 5 to 6 p.m. or send us an email at totalityradio@gmail.com. That's totalityradio@gmail.com or join us live on Tuesday, July 25th from 5 to 6 p.m.
KBOO has a mobile